The Zika virus, which has been linked to life-altering birth defects, is now in Florida, and it's taken to a new level the concern over mosquito-borne disease. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. Because of worries about birth defects, pregnant women have now been told by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to stay away from parts of Miami where people have tested positive for Zika. As reporter Sammy Mack explains, the conversations between expectant mothers and their doctors are taking on a new urgency.
Late last fall, Dr. Christine Curry was at a faculty meeting with her colleagues when the conversation turned to new reports linking the Zika virus to a surge in microcephaly in infants in Brazil.
I think it's fair to say that most obstetricians had never heard of this virus a year ago.
Curry is an assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Miami Med School and Jackson Memorial. She has a background in virology, and so she volunteered to look into this troubling new virus for the rest of the staff.
I knew from the get-go that it may end up being nothing and just an interesting story out of Brazil, or it may end up being a reproductive game changer, which is, I think, where we're at right now.
For months, screening guidelines have suggested testing pregnant women who have traveled to Zika-affected areas. And until this past week, that meant areas outside the continental U.S. The hazard zone moved much closer to a one-square-mile zone in Wynwood and Midtown Miami. Health officials announced local mosquitoes probably spread the Zika virus there. Dr. Tom Frieden is head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. On a call with the press, he recommended Zika testing for all pregnant women who have been to that area since June 15th.
What we know about Zika is scary.
Frieden says this is the first time a mosquito bite has been known to lead to a birth defect. By some estimates, up to a third of babies born to women who contracted Zika while pregnant develop microcephaly and other developmental disorders.
But in some ways, what we don't know about Zika is even more unsettling.
There isn't much research on what happens later in childhood. When Curry finds a patient may have been exposed to Zika, she talks to her about getting a test, usually a blood test, that will determine whether she has evidence of the virus in her system. Results have been taking 1 to 3 weeks. While pregnant women tend to be prepared for the anxious waiting periods that come with all sorts of routine testing for birth defects during pregnancy, right now, nothing has quite the profile of Zika.
I have to admit, I got a mosquito bite this morning, and it's probably the first time I ever cried over a mosquito bite.
Zonia Knight is due with her second child in mid-October. Knight lives in Palmetto Bay, but she's spent time in Wynwood, including a dinner the night before pregnant women were told to avoid the area. Knight called her midwife, who's prescribing a screening test.
It would be nice if I could just have my baby already. How can I rush this?
If a test in a pregnant woman does come back positive for having had Zika, then her provider has to add another layer of counseling and monitoring to her prenatal care. Things like ultrasounds, hunting for brain abnormalities, and depending on which trimester she's in, options to terminate the pregnancy. Microcephaly is just one of the symptoms of a baby harmed by Zika. It appears the virus is also associated with deformities of the hands and feet, trouble developing a sucking and later swallowing reflex, and vision and hearing loss. Dr. Charles Bauer is a neonatologist and director of Early Steps in North Miami-Dade. Early Steps is a government-funded program that provides resources like speech therapy and other interventions to babies and toddlers at risk of developmental delays. Bauer is part of a new team of doctors and therapists at the University of Miami and Jackson who are coordinating to care specifically for babies with Zika-related injuries.
We could be looking at lots of other things that wouldn't show up until a baby is older, going to school, learning disabilities, things like that.
Against the backdrop of so much uncertainty, Bauer and other South Florida doctors are doing what they can to help expectant mothers and their babies. Obstetrician Christine Curry.
I think I picked OBGYN because 95% of the time, I am there for the happiest day of someone's life. Happy birthday. Congratulations. But there's a small fraction of what we do that's really hard.
Curry says she wants women with Zika to be prepared for a tough experience, but she doesn't want them to lose the excitement of having a baby. I'm Sammy Mack in Miami.
As the doctors mention in Sammy's story, there's still a lot we don't know about Zika. But let's talk about what we do know at this point and how to prepare ourselves now that it's here in Florida. With me in the studio is Dr. Vilma Vega, a Sarasota-based infectious disease physician, Rob Kruger with Pinellas County Mosquito Control. Lisa Gartner reports on Zika for the Tampa Bay Times, and on the phone from Vero Beach, Dr. Jonathan Day, a professor of medical entomology at the University of Florida. Thank you all very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Vega, what do we know right now about the link between birth defects and Zika? Are doctors convinced at this point that there is a cause and effect?
Yes, there appears to be a definite cause and effect, especially in studying it in Brazil, and now they've extended it to various other countries around Brazil. Now, obviously, we also have a maternal registry here in the United States, and we're following something close to 300 women. So, you know, at this point, we do feel that there is a link. The actual percentage of women or fetuses that can be involved is still not known.
That's what I was going to ask you. So the risk, and we're talking mainly about microcephaly, which is this deformity, very severe birth defect.
Correct.
So we don't know the risk. Is it 1 in 100 women that are infected with Zika will have babies that develop this? 1 in 1,000?
Right. We really don't know. And I think only time is going to tell over the next couple of years.
Okay. Dr. Day, where has this mosquito been? Now, the mosquito is called Aedes aegypti. Okay. So Where has this mosquito been, and why is this disease showing up now?
Aedes aegypti is a species, and you might guess from its name, that originated in North Africa. It's a species that is a subtropical species, so it doesn't fare very well in the upper Midwest or in New England, but very abundant in Florida. And over the last couple of years, it has become even more abundant. It lays its eggs in containers. So as the plastic trade has increased, there are all sorts of plastic containers, and it has become an exceptionally abundant mosquito in Florida.
Why is this the one that seems to carry all these nasty viruses? Why is it the one that's got the dengue and the chikungunya?
It is, and it has a lot to do with the mosquito being what's called a domestic mosquito. It thrives in living in homes with people. So if you go to a place like San Juan or Brazil, where the homes are open, not air-conditioned, this mosquito lives right inside the home with the people. The fact that it has such a close association with humans allows it to transmit some of these viruses, like it transmits yellow fever, dengue, chikungunya, and Zika. And of note, it does not transmit malaria or West Nile. So it has a very specific relationship with humans.
Rob Kruger, you're with the Pinellas County Mosquito Control. What's it like over there right now? Are you all on red alert?
Well, we are in a state of alert. The whole state is, actually. It's the emergency has been declared by the governor, and the word is out there as far as this is a human-borne problem, and it's going to take all of us to help fix it. So one of the things that we've been doing is really ramping up our education and outreach efforts. If we can get every homeowner on board with tipping containers after every bit of rain or moisture that appears, that would help basically reduce the source of the larva for the mosquitoes.
I know that everyone knows you're supposed to do this. Mm-hmm. I mean, should you really be out there every day emptying everything? Because it's raining every day, practically.
In order to keep the message clear, we do say that it's probably best if every time a rain event or any type of moisture activity takes place, sprinklers kick on, that kind of thing, or if you have just regular places in your around your home that do get stagnant as far as standing water goes and that kind of thing, it's important to get it as soon as it happens. If we were to say a certain time for people to go out there, you know, once a month or something to that extent, it really wouldn't break the mosquito's life cycle.
Well, how long does it take for it to lay an egg and then become a mosquito?
Usually what we say in the mosquito business is about 5 to 7 days you're going to have a hatch off. So that's from egg to the adult stage where it can bite you.
All right. So, Lisa, you've been reporting on this for the Tampa Bay Times. You went down to the Keys. What was the atmosphere like down there?
Well, that's a great question. There is a big gulf between how people are reacting to Zika. On the ground, people are not particularly concerned. the scientific community is up in arms. They're being very proactive. They're very concerned. The public health officer in Monroe County said this is the biggest concern he's had in his public health career. Zika, unlike other mosquito-borne illnesses, is sexually transmitted. You might not know the symptoms until you've passed it on. And it, as you pointed out earlier, has devastating effects. Instead of, you know, a quick epidemic where there's fevers and maybe a few people pass away, this, because of the birth defects, has the possibility to really have long-lasting, horrific effects on populations throughout, you know, this hemisphere. But there's something interesting, you know, as much as scientists are up in arms about this and wanting to do everything they can about it in mosquito control districts, people don't really want to disrupt their normal lives to tackle it because they don't see it happening here. You know, they don't see it devastating their community yet in the way that Brazil and other parts of South America have.
Dr. Vega, I wanted to ask you about transmission. We know that it can be transmitted through a bite from this mosquito. How else can the Zika virus be transmitted?
Well, the virus can also be transmitted sexually, as Lisa said, and also in, you know, the concern with blood transfusions. That's being evaluated and studied more. But certainly, you know, as you, if anyone's gone to get to, or give blood, they'll see that now there's a whole list of new countries where if you've traveled in any of these countries at any certain point in time around the Zika epidemic in Brazil, that they won't allow you to give blood. So we're taking extra
precautions. What about sharing needles?
Oh, obviously, you know, there can be a concern because of, bodily fluids. We realize that the Zika virus, when it gets into your blood or you get infected, the symptoms, which only occur in about 20% of patients, can last anywhere between 5 to 7 days. However, you know, long-term effects, like we've noted for the fetus, is obviously a lifetime concern. But there are also other neurological events that can happen, such as Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a form of paralysis.
And that can happen in adults, not just
And that
the
can happen
fetus.
in adults. So, you know, then we also realize that the Zika virus can, even though it can be tested in your blood for a couple of weeks, it can actually stay in your blood if in men, for example, in their semen. It can be noted even up to 6 months, which is why it's such a concern for women who want to get pregnant or women who are pregnant, that their partners or themselves, they could get infected and then these effects could happen down the road. Actually, they're recommending for women even up to 2 months not to get pregnant. But if the issue lies that their partners are infected, then obviously that concern is longer.
Okay, so how else could it be transmitted? Through kissing, through getting coughed on, sharing a cup?
Yeah, it can't get trans. We have not noted any transmission in that form. It's
Your
a
saliva.
Direct correct. It's a direct bloodborne disease. Obviously we have noted in semen, but it has not been noted at this point in saliva.
Lisa, I want to get back to the genetically modified mosquitoes. From what I understand, in other places where they've done this, they've released these mosquitoes, it's killed off 90 to 99% of the Aegypti population. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. There's a British firm called Oxitec, and they have developed a genetically modified mosquito. And it's actually really interesting. It's only the female mosquito that bites you. The male mosquito usually feeds off nectar. And so what they've done is they've manipulated the genetic code of the male mosquito so that when they release it into the wild, it mates with the wild female and kills all of her offspring, essentially stillborn mosquitoes. And so it wipes out the complete next generation. And each female mosquito can lay hundreds of eggs, you know, in something as small as a bottle cap. You know, it doesn't have to be a big container that's in your yard.
Dr. Day, could this be the silver bullet that we're looking for?
Well, it could. It has been tested in the Cayman Islands and it's been tested someplace. One of the downsides of it is that you have to have constant releases in order for it to be effective. And so I don't think I'd label it as the silver bullet. I think it is going to be another possible tool I think still a lot of testing is required, but it's going to be another possible tool for mosquito control.
Because the mosquitoes don't actually fly very far. So you're only affecting, by releasing those, you'd only affect the mosquitoes in a very small area. You'd have to release them all over the place to affect the different mosquito populations. Is that right?
Right, and that's why island test sites have been the first that have been used, because it's almost a captive population of the mosquitoes. You know, a place like Old Town Key West, I can see potential. A place like Miami, I don't know.
Okay, so I want to talk about mosquito control and mosquito repellents, because as I understand, this is the best way to fight Zika absent any kind of vaccine, which we don't have right now. And there seems to be some misunderstanding of risk. Lisa, in your article about this genetically modified mosquito, you put it this way, and I'm quoting you. The little mosquito they live with has the power to kill them, to doom their children, to scare away their chief industry and scar their community, and they're more afraid of the hero than the monster. They're afraid of mosquito control.
Right. They are afraid
About the keys here.
Of many of the techniques that could be used to fight this mosquito. And this is something that happens over and over again. In this case, in the Keys, they're very afraid of the genetic modification process. Even though scientifically speaking, this has been approved by the FDA, it has no complications on the environment or humans, there are these fears of the unknown, this idea that you might have a Jurassic Park on your hands as if that was a documentary. This idea that, you know, it could form a mutant strain or harm our children. So in the sense that Zika doesn't feel very real to these communities yet because they haven't been ravaged by it in the way that Brazil or other parts of South America have, they're more concerned about the treatment.
Rob, you know, officials in Puerto Rico have had to fight environmentalists over spraying, aerial spraying of mosquitoes. And on our air, Diane Rehm, who I greatly respect, said she would never put DEET on her body. And I was surprised to hear that, knowing how effective DEET is in repelling Zika-carrying mosquitoes. So how common is that fear? And what do you say to that?
Well, I do get a lot of questions concerning repellent use and that kind of thing. And usually what I say is there's four good alternatives, but I usually just talk about the three. DEET is still one of the top ones, although cautionary statement there with that is it seems like the levels of DEET in these products are increasing. There's another product called IR3535 that's also a synthetically produced product as well. It's also regulated by the EPA. Fairly decent control as far as repellents go. You usually get about 2 to 3 hours of that as well. But the ones that I'm really kind of hammering home these days are the alternatives, because the key with anything like this with insects or animals that have really short lifespans is a rotation of products. So I'm really trying to push the message that products that contain picaridin or oil of lemon eucalyptus are something that are mutually as beneficial as these other two, DEET and IR3535, as far as active ingredients go. But they tend to be a little bit less known as far as them being an effective control just among the public community. And so if we can get those two products in the rotation as well.
A lot of people have bromeliads in their yard, and those you can't turn over like you would a container.
Right.
So how do you kill the larvae that are in your plants?
What we usually recommend is a flushing process. You can take a garden hose and some of the more sturdier plants. The leaf axils are what actually contain the small amounts of water. And when a certain amount of detritus or nutrient load gets in there, that's what the mosquitoes are using to breed when they're in the larval stage. And I say breed as in go through their life cycle from egg to adult. The other product that we like to recommend are there's just about any home hardware store, there's products out there called mosquito dunks, and they contain a type of bacteria called BTI or Bacillus thuringiensis israelensis. And so if you're looking for that active ingredient, BTI, you can take those mosquito dunks as a whole, smash them with a hammer, and sprinkle them throughout your bromeliad patch.
How long will that last?
Usually it's a single brew, but if you do it fairly repetitively a couple times a month, you should get some pretty good control out of that.
This is Florida Matters. We're discussing the Zika virus with Dr. Jonathan Day. He's a professor of medical entomology at the University of Florida. Also in the studio with me, Lisa Gartner with the Tampa Bay Times, Rob Kruger with Pinellas County Mosquito Control, and Dr. Vilma Vega, a Sarasota-based infectious disease physician. We'll be right back. I'm Robin Sessingham. Welcome back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're talking about concern over the mosquito-borne disease Zika and the fact that it's now in Florida. Dr. Vega, is there a certain period in a pregnancy when the fetus is more vulnerable to the virus?
Well, actually, this is very interesting, Robin, because I think they're looking at all the different stages of pregnancy. You know, early on, that's where the brain formation, the neurological system in that first trimester. But it goes on and it continues to mature over the second trimester. But in the third trimester, the concern could be what other types of neurological complications could happen after birth.
Even if it's not microcephaly, could be
correct,
something else.
Correct. And we're actually looking at that and the concern of whether or not there could be issues with hearing difficulties, or even slowness in speech or understanding. So there really is a concern that down the road there could be effects that are not known at the time of birth but will be found out later.
Have they found any evidence of this in other countries, in Brazil?
Well, that's what they have been noting in Brazil. And so that's why, you know, we are also, you know, looking at that with our own registry.
Rob, what are you doing differently this season than you've been doing because of the Zika scare?
Not really much, and it sounds kind of bad to say that at the moment, but really we've tackled things like dengue fever and chikungunya before, both vectored by the same mosquito, Aedes aegypti, and we've been successful in quelling all of that.
Dr. Day, how bad is this? How does this compare to those other mosquito-borne illnesses that you mentioned?
In terms of the big epidemic, an epidemic of 200,000 cases, I just don't think that that's likely in Florida because people don't have the mosquito exposure that they have in, say, San Juan, where you go into every house and there's a resident aegypti population in every house, in every school. In Florida, it's much different. So I think the possibility of a huge epidemic is unlikely. The possibility of focal outbreaks, consistent focal outbreaks, I think is a very real possibility. So for the people in those areas, it becomes a major issue, especially for young women and young men.
Do you have any idea where it might pop up next?
The aegypti populations in South Florida, in Monroe County and Dade County, Broward, Palm Beach, I think they all have possibilities. I think any place there is an Aedes aegypti population, and the real wild card for Florida is Aedes albopictus. We know that Aedes albopictus does not appear to have been a vector in Brazil and in Central America and in the Caribbean basin. But we know that in an outbreak in Africa, in Gabon, that albopictus was the major vector. Mm. Albopictus is far more prevalent in South Florida than aegypti. And so if albopictus becomes a competent vector, then I think that will change the dynamics of this outbreak considerably.
Is that mosquito albopictus, is that spread throughout the state?
Yes, Aedes albopictus is very abundant throughout the state. It loves bromeliads. Albopictus will lay its eggs in tree holes, flooded tree holes, or water-holding plants of any type. So it's more abundant. The thing that I really dread is the first news that Aedes albopictus has been implicated as a vector.
And we haven't had that yet.
No.
Okay. Let me ask you one thing. Why do some people attract mosquitoes and some people don't? I, knock on wood, don't seem to get bit. My husband is a mosquito magnet. Is there any reason that some people seem to get bit?
Well, all you have to do is go to a party, a 4th of July barbecue, and you know that there are mosquito magnets there, and that's definitely not a figment of your imagination. Mosquitoes rely primarily on carbon dioxide as the attractant, and it turns out that humans have a wide variety of metabolic rates. Some people have a high metabolic rate and produce more carbon dioxide than other people. So it's directly results from the amount of attractants that the individuals are producing. So they produce carbon dioxide as the main attractant. Lactic acid and acetone and estradiol are all secondary attractants. And depending on a person's metabolism, those will be produced in different amounts.
Okay. Dr. Vega, what do you tell people who are concerned about coming to visit Florida, might be of childbearing age or pregnant already? I wonder what advice you would give them.
Right. I tell them that at this point, the biggest concern is not to visit the areas where there have been higher prevalence, and specifically those are that Dade, Broward region, and those kind of areas. I would, and there is an alert to stay away from those areas if you are pregnant.
Well, there's an alert to stay away from that one neighborhood.
From that one neighborhood,
but you're talking
right?
About...
We're talking about in that area of the Miami-Dade region, and they are talking about that one particular neighborhood. But in all honest reality, I would be very concerned about traveling into that region. And I think it's a matter of time that it will spread to other areas, even further than that one region. Other than that, I tell people, I say, you've got to wear your repellents. You've got to be careful. You've got to think twice if you are pregnant about traveling out of the country. You really shouldn't. Into any of these areas that would be of concern for Zika.
Rob, what are they talking about in your department, mosquito control? Do you feel like you could do with more funding, or has it been too tight? What's going on?
Well, currently our resources are holding true, and we've been able to handle situations like this in the past with the current load staying where it is. The concern for us is manpower, actually, for how we do our boots-on-the-ground activities if we get numerous local cases at some point. So it takes a lot of manpower to get all these folks out there going door to door, putting out education materials and actually looking for the mosquitoes and setting up surveillance and that kind of thing. But we had a meeting with the governor, and he reassured us that, anything that we need to kind of get to these efforts and hold true to our decree of preventative and proactive control of mosquitoes, he's going to help us with that. So far, we are relying solely on our taxpayers' dollars, but possibly in the future, there may be some additional funding that comes through.
That's Rob Krueger with Pinellas County Mosquito Control. We've also been talking to Dr. Vilma Vega, a Sarasota-based infectious disease physician, Lisa Gartner, who reports for the Tampa Bay Times, and Dr. Jonathan Day, a professor of medical entomology at the University of Florida. Thank you all very much for being with us.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
And you can join the conversation on our Facebook page, or you can send an email to floridamatters@wusf.org. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer was Richard Jimenez. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.